Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Cordless tools tailored for the world of motorsport.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally, episode 6, season 18. The episode where I've hardly put any thought into the intro. Well, not as much as what I put into last week's intro anyway. And it amused Jack no end. So much so, it's just me and Jack this week. Hello, Jack.
Hello. Is it a stipulation that only people who laugh at your intros get to come back on the podcast?
How lonely a podcast it would have been over the last 4 years if that was the case, Jack.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, everyone just wants to listen to me anyway, so you could all just give up and I'll just do the podcast on my own.
Well, if you want to, Jack, the floor's yours. There you go. You can interview yourself.
Hey, listen, I know how much work goes into this podcast, from editing to getting it all arranged and coming up with your brilliant intros, so I know how much work goes into it.
Do you know what the irony is that when I started doing the countdown, I thought, I've actually not thought about and not wrote an intro.
Tell people that.
That's the only thing I've ever wrote is an intro. The rest of it, and I'll quite happily share this with anybody, I have got A4 pads of all the episodes that we've ever done. And you will see my
scribblings. Do you know what we should do next week?
Go on.
We should all take a picture of our notebook and put it on.
Okay. Okay. Well, we can do that.
You're all about removing the smoke and mirrors. So let's tweet pictures of our notepads.
I have a picture of basically, I have a pad. And I've kept all the pads from every episode. So I've got the notes. And most of the notes happen during the course of the episode when one of you guys says something and I write it down and go, I need to pick up on that or I need to go somewhere with that. That's where most of the notes kind of come from. So
that's what all the pros do.
Steady on, Jack. Steady on, Jack. I think we all know I'm just a steady hand these days. Just a steady hand.
No, you're the mastermind behind the Absolute Rally podcast. We just all talk nonsense and you extract all the good stuff.
Did you see the fact that I've just put a tweet out? Because I thought I'd open it up for our last episode of this season, which obviously is only in 4 weeks' time, which is frightening to think about it, of whether we do another Christmas quiz or whether we do a Q&A with all the Absolute Rally guys and basically anybody can ask us anything.
I think we should do both.
Thanks, Jack.
hate's
quite a strong word, Jack, but I'll level with you. It's up there right now. Yeah.
Good.
So I just thought it'd be quite an interesting thing because we tend to take stuff for granted of that we just do this podcast. And there's lots of people who listen to the podcast who obviously realize that we all come from different angles and different backgrounds and stuff like that. But we do tend to forget, and I'll say it because he's not here this week. We do tend to forget, for instance, that Trevor's a Production Cup world champion. He was a world champion.
Yeah, but it's difficult when you're all mates, isn't it? And you're just chatting away about rap and forget the background of things.
You do, and you forget what Rye's done, and you forget what you do and everything else, and everybody forgets what I do. It's fine. But you see where I'm going with this. And maybe there's questions out there. And to be honest with you, a lot of it stemmed from the fact when I did that almost weird triangled kind of piece when we had Neil Wearden on with Trev. And it was kind of weird because Trev was kind of gamekeeper and poacher at the same time. And I thought, you know what? There's loads of stuff we've never really spoke to Trev about. And there's loads of stuff I've never, you know, I have more conversation with Rye when we meet up and I'll be asking, so when you did this, what happened when that happened? How come you ended up in that car or whatever it may be? And maybe there's people out there who'd like to hear that. That's just the thought why I thought, well, maybe we could have a relaxed one where we could do a bit of a Q&A thing. But people tend to like the Christmas quiz because do you know how much grief it takes to put together? And
we could do a Q&A and then a miniature Christmas quiz at the end of it just to give everyone what they want.
Do you know what though, Jack? Genuinely, if it's a miniature Christmas quiz, I can't even get that out. If it's a miniature Christmas quiz, it still takes probably the same amount because what a full one's going to take anyway. So anyway, listen, we're babbling before we've even started. Episode 6, season 18, we're going to go straight into it. Jack, I was sceptical. You knew it was fact. Oitanak now confirmed, of course, at High and Die, which will start the musical chairs, and it will be interesting to see what happens when the music stops. We have seen a story that you've shared over the last 24 hours that's come out on Autosport about Elvin being in your vascular. The big story the other week was, and they thought it was a bit of a wind-up, was Thierry Neuville was tweeted from your vascular as well, and people put two and two together and perhaps came up with 48.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are adding a lot of numbers together and getting a lot of different numbers at the minute, aren't they? But this is the great thing about the end of the season, isn't it? And when the silly season starts. But yeah, good to see. You know, obviously it went a little bit under the radar with the Tanak news, but Danny Sordo and Sebastian Loeb being confirmed for next year as well. So good to see those two guys back, because they're both, you know, I think probably Loeb's not really delivered above expectation, but coming back into the sport and then moving over from Citroën, you know, I think you've got to be pretty happy with what he's done when he's competed this year. And Danny Sordo's had, I'd argue with anyone that he's had one of his best years in the WRC this year, to be honest. So glad to see those two coming back alongside Oit and Thierry. Obviously, Thierry said he's happy to have Oit Tanak as a teammate. So we discussed this at length last week on the podcast, didn't we? That, you know, I believe Thierry Neuville honestly believes that he's the best WRC driver in the championship, and he'll take Oit Tanak as a teammate to prove that. So to be honest, I think the whole Jyväskylä thing, from what I understand, it was, you know, someone tweeting on his behalf either in that location, or, you know, there's something a bit trick going on there with Twitter and how it picks up locations and stuff like that. But it doesn't look like Thierry Neuville was actually in Jyväskylä. So yeah, and I'd be very surprised if he was, because for all the reasons we discussed last week, I genuinely believe that Thierry Neuville feels like this is his biggest opportunity yet to prove that he's one of the best drivers in the championship because of that move that Oit Tanak has made. So I can't see it being Thierry, but I can definitely see it being Elvin. I don't know if any of the listeners will remember, but he's Elvin's been linked with Toyota before, and Tommy's always been very complimentary of Elvin as a driver. I guess the big question that Tommy will have for himself is, can Elvin step up now and lead that team? Because, you know, whichever way you look at it, that car's won the championship this year, and unless Hyundai make a big step forward next year, then the Toyota's going to be the best car to have in the WRC.
Do you think it's going to be a leading roller? With all due respect to Elvin, that he's got, you know, no matter what the seasons that both Jari Matti and Chris have had, they would be the elder statesman of the team. So, and I know basically what happened when Oit went in there, he kind of, you know, stamped his mark straight away, and I suppose that's what they'd be looking for from Elvin.
Well, honestly, Tony, it depends on the lineup that they choose alongside Elvin. But you know, if they go with, for example, let's just say for argument's sake, if they went with Latvala and Meek, Elvin was ahead of both of them at the point of where he got his injury earlier in the season in the M Sport car. So, you know, you can make arguments for both cars. I think Toyota's got the best performance, and obviously the M Sport car has been a little bit more reliable. But you know, I think, If you're talking about performance, I genuinely think Elvin's been up there or better than Chris Meek and Jari Matti Latvala this year. And if it's an Elvin Evans, a Cali Robin Pera and a Chris Meek or a Jari Matti, then, you know, I think that's a pretty strong lineup. But like going back to what I said before, the big question is whether Elvin's ready to step up and lead a team, especially when he spent his whole life in the M Sport operation, you know, developing cars, you know, being a mechanic there and all the work he's done in the past, not just, you know, where we're at now with him pretty much leading the M Sport team now. So, you know, I honestly think before his injury, he was on for a very good season this year with M Sport, and I don't think anyone would have taken away from the job he's done. Obviously, that the guy who always tweets him and accuses of as massive Elvin Evans bias is going to kick off at this point. But I think I go back to that point that, you know, he was ahead of, you know, quite a few drivers at the point where he got his injury and was doing a good job in a car that probably, you know, in Sebastian Ogier's hands, maybe it's a little bit further up, but you know, he's on a little bit of a different level, isn't he? And that's the step Elvin Evans is going to have to make if he wants to be a WRC champion, is to really make that step forward. So it's going to be a really interesting off season, and I still don't think we've heard the last of it. I still think Toyota will be pursuing Sebastian Ogier behind the scenes extremely hard, and who knows? Maybe we'll have Elvin Evans, Sebastian Ogier, and Cali Rovanperä in Toyota next year. You never know.
Do you know what and I feel like a bit of a broken record, and I keep referring back to this, because when we had Jules on a few weeks ago, we were talking about Hyundai and we were talking about Adamo, and you know, Adamo's reference to the fact that he remembers when teams had you know, specialists and things like that. And one thing I keep on looking at when I see the Hyundai situation, I always think squad. They've got a squad of drivers now, and we've said this before. Is this going to start something off where other manufacturers perhaps need a squad of drivers in order to compete with Hyundai?
I don't know if it's difficult, isn't it? I think the squad situation works because, well, it has worked for Hyundai because they've had a focal point. You know, the other drivers, although they are of very good standard, have been there to support Thierry Neuville. I don't think anyone would argue. Would you argue with that, Tony? I think that's fair, isn't it?
I don't think it officially it ever feels like it's being said. It's almost like the elephant in the room that it's almost being the unspoken, and perhaps very, very early doors, I think perhaps, and my interpretation was Andreas felt he was going to get equal status when he first went there, and that was very, very quickly quashed. That is just my opinion.
I think you've got to prove that you deserve equal status, and at no point in his Hyundai career have we seen that from Andreas. You know, Thierry Neuville has genuinely proved himself now to be one of the top three drivers, and we've got a top three breakaway. There's people who are capable of performances on the level of the top three on a rally by rally basis, but none of them are capable of matching that level of performance over the course of a season, and that's the split we've got. But yeah, you know, I think Hyundai have done a very sensible thing that they've gone after the best drivers. They've constantly swapped their lineup around if they think that that moving them around is going to give them the best level of performance over a rally, and they've reaped the benefits from it. But they've got a big rally coming up in Australia, and that's going to be the final sort of approval of whether that system has worked, isn't it? But Toyota, I think they would have gone into this year thinking they've signed three very strong drivers. And the two that are basically behind Wojciech Tanak have not really been able to score as many points as they probably should have done over the course of the season. It's a little bit difficult to be so critical and look at it in that way. But, look how good Wojciech Tanak has been in that Toyota for the last two. He should have won the last two WRC championships in my mind. Absolutely no doubt about that in terms of, his actual performance in the car. And he's just not been matched by two Toyota teammates. And I think Chris Meek did a good job coming back after a little bit of a break, after a very difficult parting from Citroën, come back in difficult circumstances into the fastest car in the WRC, and has done well pretty much most of the year. But there's still been a few mistakes there. He points to punctures and things going wrong, and fair enough, you do get a bit of bad luck. But I think there's rallies he would go back and change if he could. And with Yari, still some silly mistakes despite being the most experienced driver in the WRC right now. So yeah, I think both of Chris Meek and Yari Mattilatfila will be looking and working very, very hard over the winter to prove that they deserve their seat, because like I said earlier, I would not be surprised if Toyota pulled the trigger and went for a Hyundai type situation where you had Sebastian Ogier, clearly six-time WRC champion, and then you had Elvin Evans, who's arguably someone who could step up to that situation if he's got the machinery underneath him, and then Kalle Rovanperä to score points and learn as he goes along.
I completely agree with you. I think one thing that is blatantly obvious now, what's going to happen is we have got this domino effect that is going to happen. And we've also got, I'm struggling to see a home now for Andreas.
Yeah. Yeah, it's difficult to know where he's going to go, especially, it's difficult when, you get this in all types of motorsport where you have a driver who's used to being paid, and then the paid drives run out, and then you've got to look if you want to bring budget, or if you want to go and do something else. And I think that's going to be the situation he's in next year. I think he's probably going to have to bring some budget, or he's going to have to fall on his feet and be very lucky for a seat next year. And Craig Breen's done a good job when he's come in on rallies this year, and there'll be a lot of fans of him listening to the podcast, and I think there's opportunities there, but there's so many pieces that need to fall in place, and it's going to be really a domino-like winter where one piece is going to flick into the next one, and that's going to open things up. But I can see Craig and Andreas being on the sidelines potentially, and a lot of us will be hoping that those two drivers aren't on the sidelines, but I could see both of them missing out due to this this switch around.
Well, you'd like to think obviously Craig has got some action, so to speak, with regards to what he's doing for Hyundai, and maybe it could be a case of for me, I can see Craig being very loyal to Hyundai in as many ways as he's got this testing program with the R5 and perhaps the new R5, and do we see much past 2020? I know we keep saying this, and I said this to Trev, I think, last week. Do we see much past 2020 for Sebastian Loeb?
I don't think so. I think it's usually, there's usually some sort of domino effect that that makes a driver retire, and it can be related to the sport, or it can be related to their personal life. So, you know, Sebastian might make that decision at that time and decide that it's the right time for him to call it a day, or he might wait to the end of the current rule cycle and decide that, that's a good time to end when, you know, things start to change and there's new cars coming in. But it'll be really interesting to see what Sebastian Loeb does. I think he's got life left in him, but at the same time, you know, he's already made it very clear that he doesn't want to do events like Finland and he doesn't want to travel as much as he used to when he was doing the WRC on a regular basis. So, yeah, maybe he's going to be one who's going to drop out of the way. But yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I think you know, it's kind of the whole Hyundai situation has kind of reminded me of Citroën when they signed Loeb, McRae, and Sainz and went for that sort of, you know, headline lineup. And I remember back then, despite being an embryo. As per your tweet picture last week, which was fantastic.
You wouldn't send me a picture. So, for the record, by the way, do you know who that was?
It's not that I wouldn't send you a picture. I just genuinely don't know if I've got a picture from that year, because There's nothing. You know, I wasn't competing in a championship or anything at that point that I know what year I was doing something or anything like that.
Okay, all right. Well, the picture was my son, basically. It was a scam picture of Johnny. So
I've had an upgrade. I've had an upgrade.
Began with a J. Yeah. That's what I worked on. Go on, sorry, mate.
No, that's fine. You know, it reminds me back then, because I don't know if you remember that year.
I remember it really well.
Build up to it. But yeah, there was a lot of similar kind of noises going on. Obviously, social media didn't exist then, but I know a lot of people back then were a bit upset about Citroën putting that kind of Hollywood lineup together and taking a lot of the good drivers and leaving, you know, leaving a gap behind where maybe there's drivers on the sidelines, or there's drivers, there's teams who don't have a top line driver. But, you know, I think it's going to be an interesting situation. And if we get this void where, you know, someone like M Sport or even Toyota could end up with not having a top line driver, the upside to that is that, you know, a driver is inexperienced or hasn't proven himself in the past to be at that level, has got the opportunity to prove that they can be and can do that at that level. So, you know, there is opportunities there for drivers. It's just there are going to be a couple who one or two at least, who miss out. You know, obviously Hayden Paddon's looking to come back in for next year, and he's another one who's on the sidelines, who's a, you know, very talented and capable driver. And we're in a situation at the minute where we've got more drivers than seats, and it's going to be difficult for some of them to stay part of the WRC next year on a full-time basis.
I think so. I think the other thing as well is that the politics of, you know, aside from the next generation of cars, let's stick with what we've got at the moment. I think it was mentioned last week, or certainly it was mentioned in our little group when we all talked to one another. Obviously, the PSA group merging with Fiat car company, which I would like to, I'm interested to see, you know, now that a car company is, obviously they've got General Motors as part of that group, PSA, obviously Fiat, all brands that have had a history to some degree, you know, I suppose you could say Opel, yes, to a point, you know, obviously Mansers and things like that, of course, but, you know, not for many, many years. Obviously PSA, we all know Citroën, and Peugeot, of course, and Fiat, you know, I suppose their last kind of proper foray, apart from the Arbath Cup, which runs an ERC, it was probably the Super 2000 program, which is, geez, how long ago is that now, Jack?
Oh, God.
13, 14 years ago? Yeah, I know. Well, yeah. I was working in it, so I should know, really. But yeah, it was certainly 08, something like that. So let's say it's, you know, 11, 12 years ago anyway. But it'll be interesting to see who ends up at the top of the pile of that new organisation once it's all sorted itself out, and what happens with Peugeot and what happens with Citroën and whether those guys will go rallying. I think for me, for the future, next year even, I think is going to be fascinating, because I'm still not convinced that Sebastian Ogier will be in a Citroën.
No, it's that's the biggest question of the offseason, and that's what'll trigger everything else. You know, everyone who's got a free seat will want Sebastian Ogier. There's no doubt about that. It's whether they can afford to pay for him, and, you know, the terms of his Citroën contract and how he escapes from that. So that's the biggest question of the offseason, and the thing that triggers everything else.
Is there a thing though? Sorry to interrupt, Jack. And somebody else put this to me. It'd be unfair of me to name them, but somebody said to me the other day, if all what's going on with the Peugeot Citroën Group, PSA, and everything else that's going on at the moment, if they wanted and out, this could be actually a really good point for all concerned to just walk away.
Because, I think we mentioned it last week on the podcast, and the only thing I can come up with to oppose that really is that, you know, a lot of next year's work will have been done, and I think
the only thing, Jack, though, but we could argue this toss about what happened with Volkswagen, what happened with ProDrive and Subaru. All next year's work was done, but it didn't happen.
I'm not saying that. You know, they've done some work for next year, so that means they'll definitely enter. But, you know, if they've got contracts with the drivers, and obviously you're talking about Sebastien Ogier getting out of his contract, then, you know, that if Citroën do really want to withdraw, basically, they can, can't they?
Yeah.
It's not it's a very hypothetical debate at this point. If they want to pull out, they can do that. But, it's a decision that management will make, and it'll be a 50-50 decision between doing something like, you know, what you mentioned with ProDrive and some of the other teams that have gone before VW. Obviously that was instigated by Dieselgate, but still they had their car built, and that car will never compete now, and we'll never see that. So there's every chance that Citroën will do that. The other option is that they bring in a driver and bring some money in and fund the program for the year and make sure that they're either at least breaking even or making some money out of it, which I very much doubt Citroën are making any cash out of their WRC program right now, because I'm pretty sure they're paying both their drivers. So it'll be something they look at and they'll make the call. But there's people in the background who are willing to pay for seats, and especially now with a bit of rotation going on, there's an opportunity there. And I think the Citroën has been a rally winner on certain occasions, and we all know it's got shortcomings and it's not a perfect car, but there's chances next year where people can be in contention to win a rally. So obviously no one's going to pay top dollar for that seat, but they might pay on the opportunity that they know that there's certain rallies where they're going to be competitive.
Sure, the PSA relationship does remind me of the 307 whenever I think of that C3 now.
Yeah, I see what you're getting at.
From the 206, which was dominant, the way the DS3 was, and it's like they've made that jump, and it's like, oh, we've made the jump, and now we've got to stick with it. Jamie Arkley, of course, the guy, the man behind the gravel crew, he does some great features and stuff like that, and obviously he put some stuff up on the 206 the other day, and there's been some. We spoke about unlikely World Rally cars, maybe ugly World Rally car, all these other things are World Rally cars. But when I look at the C3 now, I think 307. That's it. And it just reminds me of that jump that happened from the 206 to the 307. But anyway, I won't take us down that rabbit hole anyway. I'm sure.
I think the only thing you can say at this point is that, if the problem with the C3 was fixable, or if there wasn't a fundamental problem with that car, then they would have fixed it by now, wouldn't they?
Yeah, you would like to think so. Anyway, let's see what happens. There's some other bits and pieces that you mentioned before, Jack, and to be fair, I wanted to jump in on that, but I'll let you run with it. But just talking about, obviously, final round Australian manufacturers, Gary Boyd, the science that goes into a Gary Boyd fact when he sends it to me is phenomenal. It does make my head hurt. Try this one on, Jack. Hyundai can win the Manufacturers' Championship by winning Rally Australia or having two cars in the top four. However, if Toyota get P1 and P2 with Hyundai P3 and P5, the title will go to Toyota, equal points to deciding on most rally wins. If Toyota get P1 and M Sport/Ford get a car into the top four, then scenarios are numerous. The manufacturer's season is far from over. So there you go. The first part of that was mind blowing. The second part of that was the obvious, but I love the fact he sent me a graph and everything. And I will, I think he's probably already put that graph out by now because he sent me that last week, but classic stuff. Jack, something we need to tip our hats to, something we don't do probably as often as what we should. I did reach out and try and get Chris Ingram on the program this week. Obviously it's the final round of ERC coming up, Rally Hungary, to give it, I suppose, its full title. Chris currently leading ERC, and he's got a 29-point lead. He's been doing crowdfunding, he's been doing everything else. Obviously, for our biased view, for our overseas listeners, yes, we are going to back this particular Brit, and we have got everything crossed for him, haven't we, Jack?
We have, but I don't think we're being biased Brits, because if you go and look at his crowdfunding page, I reckon probably at least in between 20 and 40% of his crowdfunding has come from Central Europe, from places like Czech Republic, where Skoda love him. All the fans of Skoda love Chris Ingram and the way he goes about things. And do you know what? Whatever you say about Chris, you've got to appreciate the way he goes about things. And, you know, he's so honest and, you know, he's admitted he's not driven particularly well a lot of this year, and that he's been too conservative, too cautious at times, and even just not driven well on certain occasions. And he's the first one to admit that. And, you know, in this day and age, that's really rare, because, you know, people, you know, might advise Chris to say, you know, don't say out loud that you're driving badly. That's you know, no one does that these days, because, you know, you don't want to admit that. And especially if you're trying to work your way towards the WRC and work yourself forward. But on the flip side of that, What he has done is built up a massive support network, and the fact that people from likes of Czech Republic are helping to fund his rallying shows just what an effect he's had on the rallying community with the way he goes about things. And, you know, I think it's fair to say he's not the most popular driver in the history of rallying, but he's got a very, very popular network of fans and a good group of people around him who help him. And you know, he was the first person I ever interviewed, actually. I don't know if you knew that.
I didn't know that.
I must have been about 15, 16 years old, and he was the first person I interviewed for my blog. And, you know, he's not changed a bit fundamentally over the years. And I think he's done a great job to get himself out for the last round. He's obviously, no one likes a crowdfund. It's not, you know, it's not something any driver wants to do to get to where they're going, but sometimes it's necessary. Sometimes it's, you know, you have to ask sponsors, you have to dig deep, and you have to work really hard to get that money together. And I don't think anyone can take anything away from how hard Chris has worked over the past few years to get to where he wants to be. And now he's in a great position to be honest. He's getting to a point where he's going to be the first proper overall ERC British Rally Champion, isn't he? So that will be not taking anything away from what Vic Elford did, but that was, you know, class based and a little bit complicated back then. And this is a standard FIA kind of point system and championship, where he's going to potentially beat some strong drivers. So it'd be great to see. And like I said, I think it's fantastic what he's done and how he's gone about it. And he's gone about it in a really different way, which is so lovely to see these days. And, you know, I think it's a little bit like, although he's not getting a great reaction at the minute, it's like how Lewis Hamilton goes about things. He's very honest, and, you know, he'll say what he thinks, even if he's not sure if it's right or not, he'll say it anyway. And I quite like that outspoken nature that would have been popular, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Well said. Do you know what, just before we move on from Chris, obviously Chris is somebody that I've known since his junior days, and you know, I used to have lots of conversations with Chris, not doing podcasts and stuff like that, but genuinely we used to chat quite a bit. So I kind of know the journey, and I've kind of been on the journey, quite similar to what Jack said, really. I'm just as excited, and also I suppose a little bit scared as well of what happens next for him, Jack. Because I want him to win it. I really do want him to win it. I would love the fact that, as you say, I know he's become very popular over in Czech and things like that. I'd love to see him in a Skoda car in WRC2. That would be great. I think that would be the icing on the cake. And I think that's what perhaps maybe they are working towards. I really don't know. I've not had that conversation with him, but to me, that would be a logical debate to try and have with Skoda Motorsport if he wins in a Skoda car in ERC. But I'm sure they've got plenty of people knocking the door down trying to get Cali Roffenpera's seat. But
definitely,
if that didn't happen and he's done this crowdfunding and stuff like that, you know, it's a massive, it's the highest of highs that he's been on, and a roller coaster that he's been on this year. And you know, I just hope he's okay if it doesn't quite work out and there's still somewhere for him to go, Jack.
Well, it's a difficult situation that a lot of drivers face, and you know, there's a lot of drivers out there. One of them comes on this podcast every week who probably have missed out on a few opportunities over the years, or could have gone a little bit further if they had that extra opportunity that they just didn't get. And sometimes it's the driver's fault. Sometimes it's the way the championships work and how much budget's needed, and the budget just isn't there. You know, it's not a debate unique to Chris Ingram. It's something that, you know, a lot of drivers are doing, and still why I think R5 formula is way too expensive. But the thing is, Chris has not always performed at the level we know he's capable of. but he's always worked harder or as hard as any driver out there to make sure he's getting that budget and make sure he's succeeding. So I think he's earned that opportunity to get in a Skoda and, you know, let his driving do the talking then. You know, that's the, you know, he's always been faced with driving a car to make sure it gets to the end and not being able to crash it, you know, never giving it 10 attempts because he knows he's not got the budget to repair it afterwards if needed. And, you know, the, probably the one season you could argue where he was close to that was the season he was in, you know, the couple of seasons he was in the Opel in the RC junior category, and he did, you know, he performed very well then. So, you know, it'd be nice to see Skoda give him the opportunity, especially if he wins the RC championship, because then, you know, it's nice to give, not just to Chris, but
surely that would give a natural progression thing as well, which other drivers would kind of look at and go, okay, well, maybe there's a way in there. And, you know, that's, I suppose, because I don't know what their selection policy is. I really don't.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It'd be nice for them to give the opportunity to someone who's won the ERC to step up and, you know, the ERC is something that's important, Skoda. It contains the, you know, Czech Baron Rallies Lynn, which is the, you know, arguably Skoda's biggest event of the year, really. And, you know, they have thousands of fans who come to that. It's one of the most, you know, well-attended rallies in Europe, that event. And it's a massive one for Skoda. So, you know, the ERC does mean something to them. And, you know, obviously they're not just going to throw money at it randomly, but, you know, I think it'd be nice to see if they've got a guy in a Skoda who's won the championship, which has, you know, has not happened in a little while. Then it'd be good to reward that person with some sort of seat, even if it's not a 4-year seat. And you know, the problem is you can't have anything for free. And you know, will Skoda want to take that gamble on Chris for a full season? It's, you know, that's up in the air, and I'm sure we'll see what happens. But the other thing we should mention before we move on from Chris just quickly is, you know, how much TalkSport put into him this year, the team who runs him, and there's no way he would have done as many rallies as he's done this year if it wasn't for their help. So they've, you know, they've really taken the opportunity to support Chris and put a lot in. And I'm sure if he was on the podcast now, he'd be thanking them for what they've put in, because, you know, they've really, really helped him this year.
Yeah, no, great words. Great words. We've got to that point in the podcast where I wanted to go to, I'd made some notes, as we said at the top, I've made some notes, and a lot of it kind of just is just being highlighted from what we've been talking about with Chris. And I've got too many other businesses that I want to kind of talk about. So have you got anything else, Jack, before we go to any other businesses?
No, you crack on. I'm interested to hear what your two any other businesses are.
Okay, well, one of them first off is just talking about, obviously, sacrifice and stuff like that. I've just watched a video of David Higgins being inducted into the Hall of Fame over in the States the other day. And he was talking about, you know, by his own admission in the piece, he was up on stage, this isn't something I normally do, but he was talking about sacrifice of, you know, going to do events when he first started and sleeping in his rally car and getting into rallying, not because he's seen it as a career, because he wanted to go rallying, because he wanted competition, and everything else became a byproduct of it. And he was thanking, obviously, his family and his wife. You know, he was talking about when he got engaged to his wife bought her own engagement ring because he didn't have the money, because he was going rallying that way. He had a rally to pay for and things like that. And the sacrifice that a lot of these guys have gone through, but not just the sacrifice. I just thought it was really key and important what he said about he went rallying because he wanted competition. Everything else that happened as a byproduct. He didn't do it because he wanted to be famous or wanted, you know, the money. I'm sure he probably did, but he wanted it because he wanted to go rallying. And I you know, sometimes I wonder when I look around, does that still happen? You know, do people see the golden goose at the end of it and think, you know, well, it's going to bring all that, or is it just people who just want to go rallying and whatever happens? And in my heart of hearts, I hope that most people who go, you know, especially younger drivers coming through, still go rallying for that. And everything else that happens for good reasons. So that, hat off to David Higgins. I do plan to get him on the podcast soon because he's not been on for ages. And he's always good value when we get him on.
You planned that one well, because you just spent 10 minutes talking about someone who's exactly like that.
Yeah, exactly. Great. And
great. That is Chris Ingram in a nutshell.
Yeah. And the next part of that was unfortunately last week when we just finished the recording a section of the podcast, we found out that we'd lost Russell Brooks. And Russell Brooks, to me, But bizarrely enough, I was teammates with his son about 10 years ago for a very, very short period of time. So I had some conversations, nothing in depth, but I always found him very, very interesting because even with his son, he never really got into rallying, as it turned out, Rob, in the end. But Russell Brooks, to me, was one of the kings of sponsorship.
And well, basically introduced the first proper rallying sponsorship deal, effectively.
Yeah, because, you know, he had... you know, there's a lot said about works drivers, and that term comes from something that equates to people who used to get works cars as opposed to being works drivers. The word works has been massively skewed from when it first came about, let's put it that way. But he was somebody that went out and got budget and took it to, whether it was Borum or whether it was a satellite team for Borum. Obviously, he obviously did it with Opel as well. But he brought budget. That's what he did. And there was no slant on him doing that. You know, people, you know, we debated on this podcast when we've talked about certain drivers bringing budget. And, you know, I'm the one that flags it up sometimes as well. But there is no, there's a talent within itself being able to do that.
There's been drivers out there who are not of a particularly high standard who've extended their careers by a long time because of how good they've been at grabbing budget. And there's been drivers who've been very good who've extended their careers or furthered their opportunities because they've been good at doing it. Definitely a good thing to point out.
You know, and Russell Brooks and Jimmy McRae as well, back in the day, you know, obviously both of them, you know, were fighting with one another. But both of them were absolute kings, and there's no doubt in my mind, if Jimmy wasn't as good as what he did at getting sponsorship, then maybe we wouldn't have seen, you know, both his boys go on to do some of the things that they did, because obviously he, you know, a bit like what I've used this analogy a few times over the season of this particular podcast of what Pet has done, of course, with Oliver as well. I think there's been something really special there, but I think Jimmy did it way back when as well. And, you know, but just going back to Russell Brooks, he was a king, and I think his ethos and his work ethic, not only as a driver, but getting budget, is something that young drivers can look at still today and almost pinch from that template. Because there's something there, and the ethos behind it, rather than just relying on somebody giving you X amount of pounds, going out, cutting deals, there's so much to be said for it. And it is a very, very sad loss for our sport. And he was a fantastic gentleman. And whenever I encountered him, he was a gentleman, and a very, very great loss for the sport.
Absolutely, couldn't agree more. And, you know, Trev's very passionate about that. Like to hear his thoughts next week on Absolute Rally about what you've just said there, because Trev's very passionate about sponsorship, and he's got a bit of a different way of thinking that probably most people have who go into rallying about how he goes about it. And, you know, Trev genuinely believes there's money out there if you're willing to work hard enough for it. And I think in most cases that's true. And, you know, Russell... there's a couple of elements to Russell's career that makes him so special. First of all, the sponsorship deal with Andrew's Heat for Hire, Andrew Sykes, and that basically became the template for how to get sponsorship in rallying. And if you didn't, like you said, you know, there's a skewed view of what a works car is, but if you weren't picked to drive for the works team, then Russell showed that it was possible to get the money to drive a works car that was the same machinery as what the others were getting, and give you that equal opportunity. That was the massive part of the early part of Russell's career. And secondly, the McRae versus Brooks battle in the early 80s in the Mantas basically inspired a lot of kids and, you know, even older people into rallying at a time where it was arguably the most popular motorsport, and there was millions of fans coming out to watch the RAC in that period, and that obviously, you know, trickled down towards the British Championship when it was being covered in the newspapers and all that. And, you know, a lot of motoring news readers were listening to the podcast going, yeah, I remember that was mega, that was when rallying was good. And their battle that they had, Russell and Jimmy, wasn't always civil, but they had a great battle, and I think they always made up at the end of it, and they showed what rallying should be about: hard battling on the stages, driving the best machinery out there, and then at the end of it, there's a pint and you make up for it, and that's what that period was all about, and that's what inspired. You know, I saw so many tweets when Russell passed from people who I don't associate with rallying at all. who were leaving messages to say, that's one of the things that got me into motorsport, and I think that tells you everything you need to know about that. And finally, you know, right up until his last days, he was going to every car show he could get to, every rally show. He always wanted to drive things. You know, he was on his bike doing 7 miles a day, despite his condition and stuff. So an incredible human being, and basically another person you can add to that group of the Higgins that you've described there, who just wanted to go rallying and would do anything for it. And you know, Russell was still turning up until, you know, I think I saw him last year or maybe the year before at Rally Day, and events like that, he would always be there. So like you said, a great loss of the sport, someone who inspired so many people into it, and not just inspired so many people into it, but for many basically defines an era, or an arguably rallying's best era.
Yep. Well said, Jack. Well said. I don't know whether you've got any other business. I didn't even warn you. I didn't pre-advise you that you were going to require any for this week. So if you haven't got any, Jack, it's fine. It's my fault. People blame me, tweet me. Don't have a go at Jack. But have you got one, Jack?
I always expect to have any other business.
So There you go. Go on. Hit us up, Jack, I think was the term.
You know what it's going to be though, don't you?
Is it going to be Alton Park?
Yeah, well, the first thing is to thank you for coming to visit me at my rally on Saturday.
My little boy was giddy, and yeah, he was shouting, Jack, 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 and waving at him and stuff. And
absolutely.
It got awkward. I'll have a widget, Jack. No, son, we've got to go somewhere else now.
Let's move on quickly from that then.
Go on then.
Yeah, I went from 1 week being in the Formula One paddock in Mexico to the next week being in the Neil Howard stages. Service park in Alton Park. So that was quite an interesting back to reality moment. Me and touring car driver Paul O'Neill did the event in a pretty much bog standard Mark III MX-5 and 17th overall, which we're both very happy with. There's a lot of, you know, in between 50 and 100 grand escorts in our class amongst a lot of other stuff, and we managed to, you know, we think we would have finished second or third in Class C, and we won the MX-5 class, so we're very happy with that. But I just think it's great, Paul's starting to get the hang of it now. We should probably get him on the show soon to chat about it, Tony.
Absolutely.
He's someone who, you know, I think he won't mind me saying, and it's fair to say he struggled a little bit at first because, people, I think circuit racing drivers think they can just rock up to these events, and because they've been to the track before and they know the track, that, you know, they can be competitive immediately. And I think Paul worked out very quickly that wasn't the case, in not that he wasn't competitive, but that it wasn't going to be easy because, you know, the corners are different backwards than they are forwards, obviously a different shape. And, you know, the first two stages at Alton Park are run backwards on the circuit. So there's absolutely no benefit to have done it. You know, Paul must have done, thousands of laps at Alton Park, literally, with all the coaching he's done over the years, as well as competing. And it was absolutely of no benefit to him. So just shows the benefits of rallying, how it, you know, properly tests drivers and really, throws everything at you. You know, we had a lot of stuff going on through the day. We had a misfire on one of the stages after the water splash, where we had some flooded plugs, and it was just a fantastic day. I think that day to me summed up everything that rallying should be about. There was good crack. It was really good fun. We were hard and competitive on stages, and then when we got in, we had a good laugh with the fans and stuff, of because, you know, I use the term fans loosely, but Paul does actually have fans, believe it or not. So
you've got one that lives
Johnny,
in our house. Yeah, you've got one that lives in our house,
and that's the only fan I need, Tony.
good man, that's a great way to finish. Jack, are you going anywhere exciting? Have you got anything lined up over the next 7 days that we need to know about or not know about, probably is more important.
Well, probably not know about, to be honest, but I'm going to go to Macau on Monday for the Macau Grand Prix.
Okay.
So that's going to be quite interesting.
You're going to be off next week.
Well, you know, you might be able to rope me in.
Oh, you never know. You never know. Thank you, Jack, for joining us this week. Obviously, Ryan Champion, the man from Del Monte, God knows where he is. He's got his white suit on and he's somewhere else at the moment. Trev already warned us that he wasn't going to be with us, so it was just Jack and me for this week. But we've got a couple of other things coming up in the podcast, folks. If you are enjoying what we do, I did flippantly say it last week, if we could get some more reviews on iTunes, it does help, especially when we start getting towards the end of the season as well, because we need to start working out downloads and things like that. And by the way, the downloads are up, and thank you all so much for that. The figures are looking really, really good, and it helps us when we start talking to our partners. Of course, we wouldn't be here without Keeld, and obviously we've got to start looking at things for 2020, which is really exciting. but now is the time to start doing it. So reviews and sharing about really does make a difference. Anyway, folks, again, keep showing the love, but we'll be back after this break.
This is Absolute Rally.
Absolute Rally continues to be partnered by the Kielder Works team, who remain fully committed to the sport and are pioneers of the latest technology. Kielder cordless tools are tailored for all forms of competitive action.
Go back to the future with the Kielder Works team.
Welcome back to the next section of Absolute Rally. Thanks to Jack for joining us at the top. There was a little bit of a panic on our level with you because everybody disappeared on me for about 24 hours. So Jack came to the rescue. Still no sign of Ryan Champion. Hope he's safe. Hope he's somewhere safe and sound. Anyway, I'm sure he is. In fact, he is. I'm lying. He texted me to say he just couldn't do it. Anyway, without further ado, we're into the next section of Absolute Rally. Something I've been trying to do for the last couple of episodes, to be honest with you, because obviously we've spoke about it quite a bit. And ironically, Ryan Champion's been there quite a bit, and he's soon to be back over there very, very shortly. But we thought we'd get somebody on who could talk to us about the return of the Safari Rally and what it's going to look like and how things are going to pan out and everything else. And there's no better man who I know listens to this podcast than Jeff Mayers. So, Jeff, welcome to Absolute Rally for the first time.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you. It's good to be on.
It's real time, isn't it? Because as we recorded this, and we won't say too much about it, but you've literally just been out on one of the stages that's going to be used.
Yes, that is correct. So some of the stages will be on our Wildlife Conservancy. So I'm actually here at my safari lodge right now with the organisers and the clerk, of course. And we've been out checking the route.
Which is exciting. Now, how you're a rally man through and through, like all of us are. The big thing, of course, is about the safari over the years, obviously, is the physically tough event on the drivers and the co-drivers and everything else, but also on the cars. You've seen these 2017 cars, as we call them now. Do you think there's going to be lots of changes to them to get over some of the routes that you guys are going to be throwing at them?
You know what? The rough safari nature of days gone by is not what we're going to see next year. The routes are a lot easier in that respect. But what will be more challenging is the definition of the roads. You know, we don't have typical forest roads here. The grasslands and even the open forest we have here, the road is more of a guideline. And I do believe that's going to be a bit more challenging for the WRC drivers. The cars themselves, I think they'll handle it quite easily, because we just have to look at how the modern R5 cars are doing here in Kenya.
Of course.
You know, I have five of them on our local events, and they seem fine.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because that's something which you kind of forget about. Obviously, National Rallying is quite strong over there, and you do have modern machinery over there already.
Yes, very much so. I mean, at the moment, the R4 Evo 10s are still the dominant power. And I think that is just, it's a bigger engine. It's much higher altitude. We rally at 6,000 feet here. And although the R5s have won the odd event, they're not quite a dominant force just yet.
Okay. If memory serves, Tapio Laukkanen's been out there quite a bit, hasn't he?
Yeah, Tapio pretty much lives here. Yeah. He comes out for every rally of ours. He rallied a Subaru and took the title about 3 years ago, I think. And he is nurtured on Manveer Burian, who has a Skoda R5. He's won the last three African Championship titles. And he now looks after another local guy called Onkarai, who has one of the VW Polo R5s.
Okay, interesting. So, obviously, rallying is, because everybody can, and I'm a little bit guilty of this, Jeff, to be honest with you, because of, I suppose, the big deal, and quite rightly made, of the kind of historic events that's been going on over there, and of course, our own Ryan Champion being a winner of one of them, we kind of think of historic, but obviously, there's money being spent, and I guess money's being spent on infrastructure as well, knowing that now you are going to get a WRC event.
Yeah, no, very much so. You just have to look at the WRC Safari Rally Project headquarters to see that the money is being spread across the board. The rally organizers are contributing to the local communities to sort out some of the road networks. And, you know, obviously we want this to work, and we want it to not just bring the WRC Safari Rally back to Kenya, but we want to push Kenyan motorsport forward as well.
Which obviously I know that's something that you've been keen to do, and you have done, and you've been backwards and forwards. Obviously you lived over in the UK for quite some time as well, and obviously being back over competing, because you compete yourself, and I suppose it must be a mouthwatering prospect, the fact that you're going to have a WRC event back at home. And I suppose which hat are you going to have on? Are you going to try and do it, Jeff? Are you going to be, because I know you're involved in the organising side as well, how is this going to pan out for Jeff Mayers personally?
So I compete in a Tomcat V8 rally raid car, which is allowed in our rally championship as well as our off-road championship. And it is a very competitive car out here, but it's not going to be allowed in the Safari Rally next year. So I am looking at options, maybe looking at one of the South African-built Ryker R4s or a second-hand R5 that I could hire for the event. But failing that, obviously the organizing team is very keen for me to be involved, obviously because I know the area intimately, and two of the stages are on my own land. So, yeah, I'll have to decide in the next couple of weeks, I think.
Exciting. Now, people obviously are looking for the next buzz and the next place to go and spectate. And I suppose, I'm not entirely sure, and by all means put me straight on this, I suppose historically it wasn't an event that got a lot of overseas spectators, I'm guessing, Jeff. Am I wrong in saying that?
Obviously, you know, spectators would come out and combine watching the rally with a traditional safari holiday to go and see all the wildlife. So I guess in that respect, it was hard for us to determine how many came out influenced by the rally. But since it's been announced that we're back in the calendar, the interest and you know, just the feedback from people is very, very high. It's a good opportunity. It's the middle of the summer holidays in Europe. I think everyone wants to make a week or 2 weeks out of this and combine the two.
This is something, obviously, you've just mentioned, obviously, two of the stages are on your own land, but you've obviously been hosting tours there for a number of years now, and this will be something that you'll be looking to do, I'm guessing, as well as getting people into your place and being able to help them in organising tours and, you know, escorts and things like that to go to the right places.
No, for sure. I mean, obviously, I run my own two safari lodges, but I also have a travel company. So we've been able to tailor-make tours to suit all sorts of budgets, from the proper budget, cheap and cheerful, all the way up to people who truly want five-star luxury. The interest and the feedback so far has been really positive.
That's brilliant. If people are interested in getting out there and talking to you, what's the best way of reaching out to you, Jeff?
I mean, the best way is probably to drop me an email. My email address is Jeff for the G, so that's GEOFF@amazingafrica.tours, which is a little bit of a play on my name because, of course, my surname is Mayes. So it'll be a Mayes in Africa.
I like it. People do reach out. I say Jeff is a genuine rally man. I've known Jeff for many, many years, and there is probably no better person placed in order to help you if you are seriously looking at going out and seeing an event, which, and this is the other thing, isn't it, Jeff? You know, the iconic images that have been created over the years over there, and I suppose, you know, what we are missing is a silhouette of a modern world rally car. It's been missing now for 18 years. Has the country missed the influx of teams coming over? You know, is the passion still there for WRC, Jeff?
The passion has just continued to grow and grow and grow. And, you know, whilst the World Championship has been sorely missed, and I think a lot of the WRC teams will be pleasantly surprised by how far Kenyan rallying has come, I think the Kenyan spectators and the passionate fans are going to be truly blown away by what a modern WRC car can do. You know, we obviously have our local heroes, you know, Flash Tundo, who raced against Flying Champion on the Classic, Baldev Chaga, who looks like he's about to wrap up this year's cycle, and Ian Duncan, who actually won the WRC Safari Rally back in 94 for Toyota. So all the local fans are rooting for these three guys and genuinely believe that they're going to, in their Group N or R5 cars, be able to upset the form book. And I know that's not quite going to happen. So it'll be interesting to see what the fans look like after the first run.
Fantastic, fantastic. Listen, Jeff, I genuinely wanted to reach out to you because once it was confirmed, you were the man to go to talk to you about this stuff. Obviously, we have our own Ryan Champion, but it's always nice to talk to somebody outside of our inner circle, and it's great to have you on. Hopefully, a bit nearer the time, Jeff, we'll get you back on and we can talk a little bit more about routes and what is confirmed and what isn't confirmed and everything else. So would you be up for coming back on, Jeff?
Always, always. For you guys, definitely. I'm a very big supporter of what you guys are doing.
Fantastic, fantastic. Folks, just before I forget, because we didn't mention at the top of the podcast either, good luck to everybody, by the way. We're going completely polar opposite to Safari Rally. Well, we've still got Jeff on, but I know Jeff knows these events very, very well, having been over in the UK for a number of years. But it's the Jim Clark Rally this coming weekend, the return of that. And I wish everybody a great event on that. Me and Jack did mean to do it at the top of the podcast, and the same with the Manx National as well. Back to closed roads for everybody. The weather is going to be probably horrendous this weekend for two very closed road events. But first time back out for Jim Clark for a few years for obvious reasons. We wish everybody a safe event on that. So Jeff, listen, we're going to let you go because we know you're literally with the Clark of the course for this event. So we're going to let you go. Folks, we're going to go to a little break and we're going to come back with Tom Williams to round up of his JWRC season.
This is Absolute Rally. Ireland's leading commercial note supplier, Killian Duffy, has joined forces with 2016 British Rally champion Craig Parry to form On The Pace Note UK. For more information, visit the website onthepacenote.co.uk.
Welcome back to the next section of Absolute Rally. We had absolute nonsense at the top of the podcast, of course, with the boys, but we've got some sense now, I'd like to think. Our manning JWRC for 2019, and they said 2018 then. Well, to be fair, you were in it 2018 as well. Tom Williams, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Hello, how you doing?
We're all good. We're all good. Thank you for joining us from some exclusive area that only high-profile JWRC drivers are allowed to be. Where exactly are you, Tom, at the moment?
I'm in a warehouse in Berkshire at the moment, getting ready for one of our shows.
I did say all that very, very tongue-in-cheek. But anyway, it seemed a good time to... You know what? It seems really odd that it's... Well, we're already into November and the year's kind of gone nowhere. How has the year been for you? We'll talk about results and things like that in a minute, but has it just been a blink of an eye for you as well?
Yeah, it's been a tough year, but it's been exactly what we wanted it to be in terms of times, but in championship wise it hasn't been ideal, especially on GB, which is killer with the double points. It doesn't matter where you are, as long as you're on GB with double points, it helps. But progression wise for the last 2 years in JWRC, we started 4 or 5 seconds a kilometer off the top driver. And then by the time we got to the last few stages of GB, we were either faster or 0.1 seconds a K behind. And that's all we wanted with the progression, learning the events and getting a whole understanding of rallying. So it was like a university being in the JWRC.
Was it? And do you know what? That's incredibly refreshing to hear. And I do kind of know the ethos behind what, obviously, from what you're trying to do and everything else. But most drivers would go into JWRC with the obviously wanting to win. Obviously you wanted to win, but did you treat it as a long-term strategy as opposed to, well, I've got to try and win this championship? Was it always about learning the events and then seeing where we ended up?
Obviously you would want to win the event because that's another completely new thing you got to understand. Anyway, you go is dealing with there's obviously driving fast, but then they're driving fast and being under pressure, which is a whole different world. So that was something that was new to me and we were trying to create, which was the pressure, which is something I really struggled with. So we were starting to get a way around it and get them time to get used to driving under pressure. And it wasn't ideal having the mistakes we made, but I've learned from them and they've been pretty harsh and stupid mistakes from me, but we've learned from them and we know exactly where I am with everything and I'm happy with what we can do now.
You talk about the two year kind of in JWRC. Does that mean Tom's done now with JWRC, or are you going to be enticed back perhaps, obviously, with the shake-up of the calendar for 2020?
I think this will be the end for us in JWRC. Obviously, we can do it again. Well, we don't know if we can, but we would...
There's no age limitations on you returning.
But four-wheel drive, we need to learn. It's, you can keep from doing front-wheel drive areas, but it ends up in four-wheel drive. In racing, you start off in Formula Ford, and then you're Formula 3 and Formula 2, and you're always in rear-wheel drive, and it changes the power and aero. It's a whole different area going to four-wheel drive. There's a lot more different aspects, and you've got to learn somewhere. And a lot of the other younger drivers than me, like Kalle Robin-Pera, Oliver Solberg, they've been in four-wheel drive or rear-wheel drive from the start. So even if it's just me driving around Subarus or any car in that area, it's just I need to learn that style because it's just so different.
So in order to do that, what's got to happen? Is that testing, or are you going to commit to perhaps a program in a four-wheel drive car and treat it as the university of a four-wheel drive, perhaps for another year or two?
Well, this time it won't be, obviously I need to learn it, but I've learned all the lots of different aspects of the pace notes, the fitness and the high competition in the JWRC. The only difference for going to the four-wheel drive is just the new car. So yeah, to start with, we need to do some testing in lots of areas, but we'll be wanting to do, I think, picking and choosing events. We're trying to work out when all the championships. We're just trying to work out what's coming out next year, but we need events that are sponsorable and things that can give value to people, because this is what I'm working on at the moment. The next few months, going around endlessly to shows and gesture or save anywhere I can just to raise some money and to actually give some good value to people. So stuff like IFA, Goodwood Festival Speed, WRC events like Sardinia and Portugal, they're just really good value. You can let the sponsor have a good time, so... That'll be the next plan, trying to work this out.
And when because obviously that's always been the big goal for everybody is to try and find supporters and backers and things like that. How do you, what is the approach? Because, we all know that rallying is an incredibly difficult sell to those who don't know it. So how do you sell it, Tom? How do you approach somebody new, perhaps, and say, come and take a look at this? What's your approach to it?
Well, there's lots of different angles you can sell the rallying from, because it's such a great sport in a way. It's such a challenge, because if you look at rallying from the outside, it's very hard to understand how someone goes so quick on roads they've only seen twice. But then it's the behind the scenes work that everybody does. And you can give the value in the way that you have cars, the top WRC cars are almost at the Formula One level, but you're putting them in situations that they shouldn't really be in the middle of a forest or a desert. And you can get some really great photos of sponsors with their branding on the side of the car in places under extreme conditions. Or there's where you have test days and taking people out and giving people rides in the car. And then just B2B business deals with other sponsors we have. But going to the shows I go to with exhibitions, I'm always meeting people, and it's going quite well at the moment. So
it is an exciting time. Is there a tinge of sadness to kind of move away from perhaps a fixed program? Obviously, I appreciate what you're saying. You're picking, you're looking to picking and choosing, but. Even over the years when I've done stuff, I've always liked having a calendar at the beginning of the year and going, right, well, it's a championship and I'm following that. What you've just been describing there is a different mindset again, because you're not setting yourself up for a championship. You're kind of setting yourself up to do events. And I think that's a different mindset as well.
Yeah, it's really good on the sponsor side, because you can choose and pick what's the best value. But of course, I think we will be sticking to a championship, because then coming in from a different angle, I need the pressure and I need the competition to increase my speed, because if you're just focusing on one event the whole year and you put all your effort into one event and you do really well, it's not the same as if you're doing 14 events and they're all different surfaces. So of course I think we'll just be delaying the year. That's all I'll be saying. It'll be will, because a lot of the events are a bit tricky for us. We don't want it to be so rushed at the start of the year, finding sponsors and trying to raise the budget for four-wheel drive. So I think we'll delay the year and push on the second half, which will work better for us, I think.
How does delaying and not being in a car work for Tom Williams, though? That's tough. That's tough, isn't it?
Well, that's a hard thing. It won't be a delay. It'll be more championship-wise. So maybe we'll start with the smaller events, one-off events, and doing testing. And I'll be working up at the rally school, trying to go around with some sort of Subaru or any car I can get into. Karting, just trying to get in any car, even doing some drifting courses, just be in all sorts of different shaped cars, and then just keeping it up and then doing some testing and anything I can, and then if we can find the championship, we can focus on later on in the year, say, I don't know, WRC2. It seems very sponsorable and good mileage, but also expensive, so it's just a balance of everything, and it's more making it up as we go, depending how the next few months go.
Looking back over your time, if we're going to take it as read that perhaps JWRC is now the line is drawn under it, looking back over your 2 years of JWRC, I suppose favourite moments, favourite events, drivers you came up against, what will you take from it?
Yeah, JWRC was an experience that you don't get in many places. I was very thankful to get into this area, and it was just a moving bus of very quick drivers. The JWRC in the last few years, with a lot more backing and a lot more appealing prize, has brought a lot of top class drivers. There's been 15 of us the last 2 years, every 2 years, a new 15 top drivers, and we're all on a bus that's on a very steep learning curve, and everybody's going quicker. So you see all these guys coming out of JWRC, and they're going back to their local championship in Sweden, Romania, I don't know, Italy, and they're winning their classes when they go back home. So it's been a really great experience being around these guys. And it's also been a really good atmosphere. Everyone tries to help you out, and because the events are so hard. There's only five events, a very big event in between, but each one's completely different. So going from Sweden to Sardinia to Corsica and Finland, none of them were the same, and it was very hard to be, it was the all-round driver one. So it was a really great experience. But I think I actually really enjoyed Turkey 2 years ago because it was so different. It was the hottest event I've ever done, the roughest event I've ever done. And trying to crawl those R2s over and around the rocks was quite an experience. And seeing all these little front-wheel drive cars going down the motorway with very flat rear beams was quite an experience.
You've obviously, JWRC is an M-Sport run championship, and you've been spending a bit more time as well behind the scenes at M-Sport. Have you enjoyed that? Have you enjoyed getting your hands dirty?
Yeah, no, I love it. I love being around. I've been with the M-Sport car, R1 to R2 to a new-shaped R2 for 4 years now. And being around the team and everybody, it's a lot of help. And I've been up in the workshop in between events for a few weeks at a time. And just being around all the guys is a lot easier. And I look forward to be working with them in the future because it's a really great atmosphere. And when they can help you and you can know the R5 cars inside out, it's a lot bigger help. And there's just so much experience on that team. That's the one thing M-Sport has, is just the experience of everybody. And it will really help in the future. And I hope to be doing more and more stuff in between events, sponsors and mechanic work.
Well, we've used this kind of analogy before, and I think you shared the same R1 car. Obviously, Gus Greensmith went through a very similar process. You shared the same R1 car, which is ironic, a little black. Was it black or was it wrapped? It was wrapped. It was a red one, wasn't it?
Well, it was a multicoloured car underneath, but Gus wrapped it until we took it off and found the multicoloured body filler underneath.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? I've just had to do a Google because I can remember it. I can remember that car. I don't know why I can remember, because I can seem to remember sitting in it at some point. It was PX12. Because is always a Cumbrian prefix for registration.
It was also Thierry Neuville's recce car before that.
Wow. There you go. There you go. It's got some heritage, that car, hasn't it? It's got some heritage. But where I was going with this, obviously, I suppose what Gus has done and what Gus is trying to achieve is it gives you a little bit of a target as well, because you're kind of repeating to some degree what he did.
Yeah, well, it's just such a similar process, because we've been looking at everything. We've been looking at all the different ways of doing everything, and the R5, if I can do it with the R5 is very sponsorable, and you can really make it works very well with sponsors. And if I can do a lot more PR activity, like there was London to Brighton I went to on Saturday, and they had a section with three or four modern cars on Regent Street with about 30,000 people walking past. So I thought that was great if we could just have a car there. And it's just, it'll be, I think, a similar process, but doing more and more teamwork and stuff I can do with sponsors and bringing rallying a lot more onto the map and more as well. Because everybody I know, you see a video of it and you don't know how everyone's doing it. And it needs more media, I think.
Yeah. And it's that sort of thing. I was just about to say, you know, you're very active, obviously, with Instagram and your Facebook page, and obviously on Twitter and stuff like that. Is that the logic behind it? Is that to engage more people and perhaps bring people who wouldn't normally be liking this stuff? Because that's the big thing now, isn't it? Likes. It's bizarrely
exactly
enough. That's how everything's kind of gauged.
Exactly. It's so different now. I struggle. If you do it in the old-fashioned kind of style sponsorship with the sticker on a car, the influencers on Instagram, they seem to be having a million followers, and it's an instant million followers on every photo they put up. So it's a different way of going about it, and it'd be great to have a completely new audience of rallying and just bring more and more people and get them involved. Because the sport's the best it's been at the moment. There's the most people watching it on events, and it's going in the right direction.
I couldn't agree more. So, obviously, you, as you mentioned at the top, and I said rather tongue-in-cheek, obviously, you're doing the day job now, obviously, in the family business and everything else. But what's going on now? Obviously, we've now got, it's next month's Christmas, which is frightening to say. But, yeah. I know, what happens now over the next few months? Obviously, you're still training, you're still trying to keep focused, obviously still talking to Phil and things like that, and I suppose it's just all planning.
Yeah, so the next few months will be, we've got all of the areas where I need to work on, so there's 10 little bars for everywhere I've been working on, so fitness, social media, driving, pace notes, and it just needs to raise up in all the levels, in all areas I need to get better, so I've been talking to a few people who can help me in each area, and it'll be just raising it up and not letting it get slack over the winter, because the winter's a lot when you're not rushing around in between events and traveling and doing shows and everything I'm doing. It's hard to get some regime, so now it's a bit more quieter over winter time. I can really push everything forward and go from there. But it's also doing the family business exhibitions. It's a good time to help out with everybody and get more work in and do shows over Christmas time.
Good man. Tom, we'll be waiting to see what is announced for 2020. Obviously, we'll have you on. Well done for the last couple of years. Obviously, you've been our man in JWRC. It means we're going to have to find somebody new in JWRC now next year, which is exciting. That's exciting for us. Before we do let you go, what do you make of them going to Chile in JWRC next year? What's your take on that?
I really like it. I think Chile was probably one of the best events I went to this year. I didn't compete, but I went over there. And obviously, there's the balance of the price, because I think the price will go up a little bit because it's a long-haul event. But I think Matek's done quite a good deal. But for doing a long-haul event in a junior car and being Chile, it was a fantastic event. I've never seen so many people in a town square before. There's the most fantastic atmosphere going over the start ramp. Three cars at a time with must be 20,000-30,000 people in there. And the roads, when I was out there, I thought I was in Wales, actually. Exactly the same kind of trees and roads. It was quite strange and foggy.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Sounds like Rally GB weather. But, still, there you go. There you go. Listen, Tom Williams, thank you so much for being our man in JWRC, and we wish you the very, very best for your plans for 2020. Folks, that has been this week's podcast. Thanks for the download. You know where we live. It's @Absolute_Rally on Twitter, facebook.com/AbsoluteRally. Or if you want to check out all the old episodes, they're also on Spotify now as well, by the way, but you can go to absoluterally.co.uk and they're all listed there. Folks, we'll be back same time, same place, in the podcast hall next week.
Absolute Rally, powered by the Kielder Works team. Spread the word and download the podcast every week.